So here we are, class four, it's about space dimensionality. You know, last time we looked at locatedness, which is an aspect of space dimensionality. Today we want to look at a couple of different aspects, take a little bit different focus, but the last class and this one are kind of exploring a similar theme. So before we get started with that, let me mention a couple of things about the future. the first is a reminder that while there hasn't been a charge for this first session, which is 6 weeks, there will be a charge for the next one. There'll be a break of 1 week, and then we'll go ahead with the second course, which very much absolutely grows out of this course. Not that I want to try to sell it exactly, but I think we'll be looking at some really interesting things in the second course. So you can be thinking about whether you want to continue. And also, I think you know already that there is a retreat that's taking place in northern Germany at the end of July and beginning of August, which will also it'll be pretty closely tied into what we're doing now. I see the retreat as a way to really engage the practices more. You know, many of the practices that we've done here are just a way of giving you a little taste, you know, a way of exploring, something you can explore during the week. But, the way that I'm really trying to present things in this course, they lend themselves really well, I think, to a kind of sustained engagement in a retreat. So it's connected. Okay, so those are the two things I wanted to make sure to mention. And now we can go into the topics for today. So we've been making this fundamental distinction between space in the sense that we think of it when we think of objects that occupy space, and space as we inhabit it. That's, you know, the space that as living, engaged human beings, we really where we live our lives, the space we live our lives in. So you could say that you know, there's the space that we inhabit as bodies, as kind of thing-like substances, but the space that we inhabit in terms of, you know, human beings who have concerns, who have thoughts, who have wishes, who have fantasies, all the mental stuff, you could say. We have learned in our culture to think about all that stuff as not taking place in space. But that's not quite, well, that's not a very fruitful way to look at it. When we're really trying to see what it's like if we really try to understand space as a realm, like you could say, I suppose, that we inhabit, and that all of us is actively engaged in space. That's kind of the underlying theme, you could say, of what we're trying to investigate here. It's not as though it's a different space. It's not as though we suddenly move into some different realm. It's just that if we understand space in this different way as an inhabitable realm, then our way of being in the world, our way of engaging the world, and our way of, that's what we've been looking at now, our way of engaging the world changes. It becomes much richer. And, you know, then there are two additional steps. This is more what we'll do in the second course. Our way of engaging our own internal processes our own, you know, thoughts and feelings and so on, our understanding of those, our all of that changes as well, and also then our way of engaging other people and other living things. Maybe you could say the earth is kind of a living thing too, but that's something to think about later. So we want to see what it's like. We want to learn what it's like to inhabit that space. And in order to do that, part of what we want to look at is what is the ordinary space like? What are the kind of structures that we take for granted in ordinary space? And how can we call those into question? So that's what we've been doing. Last week, we were looking at location and locatedness. That's something that's absolutely built into our usual understanding of how space works. Things are located. Things that occupy space can do so because they're located at a particular place in space. That's the locatedness factor. And last week, we looked at some ways to really, you know, to ask about that, to question it. So before we get started, well, let me say this week, what we're going to do is so the way that I think about it is, you know, usually when we think about occupied space, about ordinary space, we say space has three dimensions, right? Width and depth and height, I guess. If we start to think about inhabited space, then we could say, or maybe it's not yet inhabited space. If we start to think about ordinary space, but look at it in terms of how we inhabit space, then you could talk about three dimensions as well. And those are location and distance and separation. So today we'll be looking at distance and separation, mostly at distance. But before we do that, and because I think it's a good practice to kind of bring us here, you know, if we want to inhabit space, we have to really arrive. We have to be present. And so any number of practices actually encourage that kind of presence. We want to go back and do a locatedness practice to start with. So you remember last week we talked about the idea of dislocating space, and we did a practice with the breath. We you know, just briefly, we did a practice with the sense that breath is not something that has to be located. You know, that there's the whole field of space can be filled, I guess is an okay word, can be filled with the breath. And then we also did a practice with seeing. So today I'd like to do the seeing practice. The basic idea here is that when we look at something, which is at a distance, and that's how we'll be looking at it, we'll be exploring that idea of distance later today. But when we look at something, the typical way to look at it is to say, well, there's that thing there, and then I'm the one who's looking at it. And that's the ordinary located understanding. That thing is located over there, I'm located over here, and the activity of seeing the thing has to do with somehow, you know, not actually so clear. I mean, science gives a good, clear explanation, but somehow we bridge that distance between the two. But instead of doing it that way, you can focus on the activity of seeing. And when you look at the activity of seeing, you do not, you don't have to emphasize the location of the observer, the bystander, or the thing. So we talked about this last week, so I'm really kind of reviewing as a way of introducing the practice again. One way of saying that we didn't talk about last week, which is found in the TSK books, is you can say that when we see something, we automatically make the assumption that there is a source of our seeing. You know, so if I look at the clock, I say, okay, the clock is over there. The clock is the source of, you know, the light. I mean, it lends itself to a scientific way of talking about it. So light rays bounce off the clock and they bounce into my eye. And so the clock is the source. Although if you think about that, it becomes a little problematic. But roughly speaking, you know, the things are the source of what we see. And you don't have to see it that way. You don't have to approach it that way. I mean, not that that's wrong, but you could say, well, that's kind of a theory, right? What happens is there's a seeing. And in order to make sense of the seeing, we say there's a source from which the light rays emanate or from which they bounce off of. And then there's a seer over here. But the actual activity of seeing has nothing to do with that. The actual activity of seeing is not located. The fact that we go ahead and assign a location to the thing that we see, and we make a lot of assumptions about the nature of that thing, that's fine. But that's not the seeing. So let's practice with that for a couple of minutes. And it's just kind of a reminder because we did this last week, and I hope you've been doing it during the week also. But let's practice with it for a couple of minutes. So just look around the room or settle on one object if you like, and let the seeing be present. And you know, with the sense that the seeing is not located anywhere, not any particular place. Let's try that. Just a couple of minutes. Okay. So, of course, I'm happy to have people comment on that or ask questions about it. Perhaps it seems a little artificial, but it takes a little getting used to. So somebody already posted a comment. Let's see who it is. David, okay. If I let that go, he says, and relax the focus on specifics, and that is in a sense what we're doing. You know, if you think of seeing as kind of a tool, you say, you know, we use seeing to make sure that we know, you know, we can identify the different things that are available in the world around us. So we focus on the specifics. That's right. And in this practice, we're not focusing. We're not really using seeing as a tool. We're appreciating the seeing itself. Right? Okay. So if I let that go and relax, focus on specifics, awareness expands. Somebody is. Let's see if I can figure out. I guess I can't mute people. Maybe Alan, maybe Kathleen, you could. Okay, sorry. Awareness expands like widening the scope of alertness for all senses to present at once. Well, that would be a whole different practice. We haven't really tried that. At least I don't see that as being implicit in this. But yes, okay. But this widening the scope of alertness, that's a nice way to say it. It's something like the sentiment expressed when someone exuberantly exclaims, "Wow, this is bigger than I thought." Okay. That momentary feeling allows, encompasses, and embodies what is seen as a kind of whole that includes more than is what is only included in the visual field. Okay, I see where you're going with this. Yes. one of the things that we're going to be exploring much more as we go along is that we don't just see in one dimension. Actually, I think in week six, so a couple of weeks from now, we're going to be talking about what I call, TSK calls, the multidimensionality of experience. So when we see something, we also react to it with our whole, again, because we're inhabiting space. Inhabiting space means that all of our capacities, which include the sensory capacities, but also all of our ways of engaging the world, that's all always involved. That's multidimensionality. And so here we're focusing on a single dimension, you could say, or maybe just say on a single sense, the sense of seeing. But in a way, the very fact of focusing in, and actually I like what I said before, because I hadn't said it that way to myself before, that the difference has to do with not just using seeing as a tool to get at this thing that we see, but really appreciating the seeing itself. That's preparing the way for that kind of multidimensionality, I think. Okay, well, let's go on and talk about... Lee has a comment here. And Bruce does too. Suddenly a couple of comments popped up. Good. Bruce said... says it seemed more that seeing holistically locates, it seems more that seeing holistically locates than that it is located. Okay, so I said seeing itself is not located, right? And seeing holistically locates. It presents a gestalt in which locations are local, which makes sense. And focusing on one thing is a roaming in what seeing already has given. Yeah, I think that's a nice way of putting it. It's seeing gives us a whole. You could definitely say that. And then you need to think a little bit about when we focus on one thing. Does that become the whole, or is it always situated in a larger context? I won't try to explore that further. Yes. Sure. Oh, okay. A gestalt in which locations are local relations. Relation between the one who's seeing and the one what's seen, or local among, between and among things. Okay, I get it. That does help clarify it. And we actually, last week when we did the practice, we started by saying, well, just don't focus on any one thing. Let the whole be present. This time we kind of skip that step. And then Lee says, oh, I'm sorry, Ken, go ahead. Yes. I see. Right. Okay, that's good. I was talking about source from, and I was thinking more as of the box of matzah, to use your example. But there is a sense in which you say the seer, the bystander, we ordinarily think of as the source of the seeing. But the seeing itself, you're right. You know, so one of the really kind of central things for me anyway in the TSK vision is getting more and more clear. It's kind of a long-term project because we're so committed to the alternative, but getting more and more clear on the fact that most of what we experience or most of what we take to be direct, immediate experience is really more on the level of theory, you know, that we're constantly trying to make sense out of the world. And we do that by creating these theories. So one theory is that there's somebody who's doing the seeing. It's, you know, and one theory is that there's something that's seen. And I'm not saying they're wrong theories or bad theories. You know, we need theories. We need ways of seeing the world to make sense out of things. But it's important to understand that they're just theories. And if you vary the framework, the possibilities for seeing and hearing and, you know, and thinking too, for that matter, the world becomes a very different place. Okay. So now let's go on. And so we've been looking at location, locatedness. I want to look at distance and separation. Now, to be honest, I said those were three dimensions, right? Location, distance, and separation. I think distance and separation are kind of two ways of talking about the same thing. We can be aware of the distance between me and whatever it is I'm seeing, or we can have a sense of being separated from me and the thing I'm seeing. I think it's still okay to think of them as, you know, it kind of depends on what our interest is or what our concern is. One of the things about talking about distance and separation, maybe more so than location, is that it immediately becomes apparent that that those terms, they're completely spatial terms, right? Distance only makes sense in terms of space, but they're also very clearly mental terms. So, you know, it's I feel distant from someone or I feel close to someone. That makes perfectly good sense to us. And, you know, it's not like saying we're applying a spatial metaphor. I mean, you can say that if you like to think that way, but it's just as real as saying, you know, that object is distant from me. And in fact, usually we don't even care so much about that. Distance and separation bring in immediately a kind of the mental side. I'm using the word mental, and maybe eventually we'll come up with a better word, but the side where I'm engaging an object, you know, that has to do with inhabiting the world. So when I feel distant from an object, I can look at it in terms of kind of ordinary occupied space and say that object is at a distance of 6 feet, right? But and that's typically how we do it, I guess. As soon as we talk about being distant from a person, that's completely different. that already has to do with inhabiting the same space as that person in a way that where distance and closeness and nearness really, you know, they really mean something significant. But we, right now, we're going to be staying more kind of on the level of objects. So, you know, if I look at something, if I look at the bookcase over against the wall, I have one of those, maybe you don't, but if I look at the bookcase over against the wall, we say the bookcase is located over there, right? So we start with location, and I'm located over here. But that whole way of talking about it shows that it's, you know, we're talking already about a kind of inhabited space, because there depends on here, you know, and here depends on there. Well, actually, mostly there depends on here. I'm always located here. And distance, the fact that we experience the world in a kind of distanced way, means that everything else is over there, right? I'm here, all you guys, and all you bookcases and clocks and you know, everything is there. The whole world is there, right? Whereas I'm here. And you could raise some questions about that, but I think maybe what we're going to be saying will help clarify that. So when we look at distance as compared to looking at location, I think a way to think about the difference between those two ways of looking is that we're holding one part of our experience steady and varying the other part, and it's different from what we held steady when we looked at location. You know, in location, we said there's the activity. I mean, when we were kind of doing a little experiment with that just now and last week also, you say, don't worry so much about the object as the source from. Be aware of the seeing, which is this global quality. And that's going to be really important, the kind of global aspect of space. You know, that's going to be really important as we go forward. But there is another way that you could explore this and investigate it. And it comes up, I think, when you look in terms of distance, because when you want to examine distance, you say, okay, there is an object over there. That's the way I experience the world. Now, I just said that's a theory. You know, it's really more of a theory than a direct experience, but it is the way I experience the world in terms of that particular construct, that particular theory. So when I look at distance, I say, okay, here I am, and there it is, and there's a distance between us. And what we want to do right now is get a sense of that distance, because it turns out that you know, that's one way of connecting with the very idea or the very presence, maybe better, of space. Because usually we, you know, space is just nothing, right? It's very difficult to get a sense of space. And that's because we tend to think of space as what objects occupy. So if there's no objects there's nothing of any interest to us. But when you start to look at distance, you have a way of really engaging space. So I want us just to do a quick practice here, again, for a few minutes. The practice is to, again, look around the room. We're working with seeing. We'll look at the other senses a little later. But look around the room and see if you can get a sense for the different objects that you see in the room of the distance between you and the object. And the question is, can you really feel the distance? Can you really get a sense of the distance that separates you? So in a sense, distance becomes something real in a way that it isn't usually. You want to try to get a sense, a felt sense of distance. That's the practice. Okay? Let's try doing that for a couple of minutes. Okay. So Hayward has a comment to start with here. It feels as though myself and the object share the same space. And Klaus says, more distance means more space in between, okay, and more time to get there. Well, that's interesting. It's true, right? Because distance, I mean, distance, well, when I say it's true, I'm kind of incorporating our the way we learn about things like this in a kind of scientific mode. But distances can be a measure of time as well as space. And of course, we do that typically. You know, we say San Francisco is half an hour from Berkeley. We just conflate the two. But okay, more distance. Let me come back. Let me start again. And David said, yes, the felt sense of distance is a recognition of space. The feel of between, a related sense. Yeah, between is an important word there, I think. And it's actually related to what Bruce said about the relationship between objects, right? It's in a way we're exploring that. We're just using ourselves and the entity, whatever it is we see, as the two objects. And we're exploring the relationship between the two in terms of the felt sense of distance. Now, you could do the same thing. We're not going to do it right now, but I think we'll do something similar in a little while. You could deliberately say, well, no, and this kind of relates to what Hayward said. Sorry, I was distracted. So Hayward said there is a sense of connection between the object and the space in between. You could say, sorry, I just had a little computer glitch, but it seems to have returned me correctly. Not so much that there's a distance, but there's an intimacy between me and the object. We share the same space. Right? That would be another focus. And there is, as many of you know, there is a practice in the first TSK book called intimacy, which is really not exactly that, but closely related. So that would be one way to practice. But right now we're just trying to get a sense of distance. And it's interesting to see that it may lead to a stronger sense of connection. Yes, sure. Well, you know, that may be related to something that I've noticed in doing this practice, which is that the distance itself kind of hardens. Now, that's different from what Hayward was describing, and so we're just talking about two different ways of doing the practice, perhaps. But you know, it almost felt like the distance became a solid object. And so with that, then maybe you'd say the thing becomes very solid. It's over there, damn it, you know, and I'm over here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that would be an interesting practice or an interesting aspect of or variation on this practice would be to you know, see what happens if you try to be aware of the distance, you know, make it a threefold, a triangle, let's say, you know, with, you know, or try to engage lots of different objects. No, I think that would be interesting. And you know, there is another way of talking about the distance aspect, which ties it back in. I guess maybe I already said this, but it ties it back into what Bruce said about the gestalt, you know, well, I didn't say it quite this way. In a sense, when you focus on distance, you're also allowing for the possibility of wholeness. So it could go in the direction of this kind of hardening of positions. You get very aware of the position of you and the object, and it becomes, you know, the limitations and the borders and the boundaries, all of that comes to the fore. Or it could be you say, well, you know, if I look at me and the object and the distance between us, that's potentially pretty much everything, you know. That's the whole. If I can take it all in at once, it's experiencing the whole, and then maybe it kind of dissolves out. But I don't know. I mean, you know, there are a lot of ways in this practice, and this is a very simple practice, right? But there's a lot of ways in which it could unfold. And a couple of other comments here. So Michael says, like the chicken and the egg, an object has to be separate at some distance to be perceived, and distance and separation can only be perceived in relation to objects. That's right. That's right. I think that's well put. And I mean, it's a good point to make too. And I may have used this example before in here, but you know, you do need to have distance in order to perceive at all. So you know, if I think of something, if I think of my car, that's the example I always use. And I see a picture of the car in my mind's eye, as we say, I have to see it from a distance. Right? I mean, I could imagine being inside the car, but then I'd just be distant from the dashboard or distant from the steering wheel. Or you know. So the distance is always going to be a part of what's going on, okay, and is necessary for the identification of the object. And that goes back to locatedness, too. Objects have to be located somewhere. If they're not located, they can't be objects, you know. Yeah, or if there's no distance, they can't exist in the usual sense. And we'll look at that a little later, I think. So Lily says, the distance changes our focus from objects to space. More distance, more space is generated. Right, that's good. So that's the other side. We're looking at these two possibilities. The distance makes things very solid and very substantial, or that the focus on distance invites us to engage space and actually maybe invites more of a sense of connection. So it's interesting. It has those two aspects to it. Right? Okay. So let's take a look. Let's see. I think maybe what I'll do is I'll skip a little bit here. Yeah, I'll skip all this part. Let's try doing it with hearing. So, you know, seeing is always our most familiar sense. So it seems like the natural place to start. If we focus now on hearing, when you hear something, there will probably be a sense of distance, too. I think there will. See how that's different. Let's just, I'm going to make it very open. Just try doing it with hearing instead. The sense of distance with hearing. So let's do that for a couple of minutes. Okay, so what do you notice? Bruce said thank you to whoever it was for providing some objects of meditation. Yes, we got some very interesting sounds there. And I actually found myself thinking, you know, we say, oh, those are sounds coming out of my computer. And in the background, we say, well, those sounds are being generated somewhere else, right? So there's kind of two different kinds of distance, but I didn't get very far with that. Okay. Let's see. So Lee comments on those same sounds. I guess he's really making the same point. He says, but how far away were they, right? So the sounds coming out of the computer, were they, you know, let's say they were made, they actually seem to have been made by whoever's calling in from down the peninsula locally here. But let's imagine they were being made in Albuquerque or in Germany, you know. But do we relate to them that way? No, I guess we just relate to them mostly as sounds coming from the computer. Okay. Sheila says, though I can discern the distance of the sounds from a felt sense, the sounds seem to be more inside of me than the sights. Yeah, Ken agrees. Yeah, I think that's a very interesting distinction. I agree too that the distance starts to feels very different with regard to hearing than with regard to seeing. When we see something, we kind of automatically impose distance. We could be wrong. There's an interesting Edgar Allan Poe story that I happened to hear once on the radio. It's kind of a complicated setup, but which I won't bother to go into. But these people are kind of spending a lot of time in their home because there's a plague going on, and they see this. On the hill opposite the window of the house, they see this monster that appears and kind of moves around and crawls around. And eventually, one of them realizes that it's not a monster on the hill, it's a little bug on the window. So we may be wrong about distance, you know. We can get it wrong. But definitely distance is a part of seeing. Whereas with hearing, I think it's more obvious that the distance, and you could say the assigning of a location, is a part of what we do, but it's not the hearing, right? It's a separate act. We say, oh, I hear something, and by the way, it's over there, something like that. Or at least it's not as, I mean, I'm just kind of giving a very long version of what Sheila said. She said, I can discern the distance, but in terms of felt sense, the sounds seem to be more inside of me. Now, you might wonder about the inside of me. You know, we might go back into the way we were practicing with locatedness and saying, well, the hearing is just everywhere, right? The hearing fills space, and I don't have to assign it to inside of me. But definitely we're bringing in the hearing capacity in addition to the source from, you could say, of the sound. Okay. David says, once again, widening the scope of alertness, the ambient sounds move from background and lower intensity to foreground. Sound is assertive. Then sounds become discernible, separated, bounded, but they still seem to be me, not so separate. He says, not so separate. So I think this is related to what we've just been discussing, right? That the relationship between sound and me. But I think what you say about sounds, I mean, there's always sounds going on, right? But usually we do put them in the background. This is a practice where we realize what's happening in terms of kind of the soundscape. I think I mentioned this in the last week, the ambient sound. You know? Okay, Klaus says, to hear distance, I need to create an inner picture of distance, which is a seeing again. That's really interesting. I'd never thought of that. So you're saying that you know, if I hear a car going by outside, I have to have a picture in my mind of the whole process. I mean, maybe you're not saying exactly this. I hope I'm not distorting it. So there's a seeing. So hearing involves a seeing. Well, that would be well worth exploring. I'm not going to try to do it right now, but that's very interesting. And Bruce says, when I sense distance with hearing, I note it is because I've located the sound in a mental picture. Oh, you guys are on the same wavelength here. You're seeing the same thing. I've located the sound in a mental picture, image, seeing. When there's a sound I can't identify as belonging to my local space, its location is sometimes more ambiguous. It's here, but where? Right. So distance becomes problematic, and maybe it connects back up. Maybe distance really is more just a kind of seeing thing. Now, I want to give one more example. We don't have time to really practice with this, but it's something to think about. It would be the next step. Or let me say there are two more steps that we could go into, we could have gone into if we had more time. The first has to do with trying this with touch. Because, let's say if you just become sensitive right now to the feeling of, let's say your hand, whatever it is your hand is touching. Right? So there's a tendency to say, well, there's no distance at all. There's the feeling inside the hand, that's one aspect, and then there's the feeling of what you're touching. Say, well, it's right here, there's no distance. But there is, it seems, that there is a distance because maybe it's a little bit like what Klaus and Bruce were both saying about the mental image, you know. But another way to think about it is the bystander, right? Here's the bystander separated from the feeling in the hand. So that separation then gives a sense of distance. It seems like. So that's something to explore during the week also. If you explore these different things, so seeing and hearing and touching, it's very different. And then we already talked about this very briefly. Distance with regard to things that happen mentally is a whole different arena to explore, right? So, if you have a thought, are you distant from the thought? And then that leads to a whole set of questions about where is it anyway? Where is this thought? You know, where does it show up? In what field of space is there a distance? So that's something to explore. And then the sort of interesting limit case, it seems like, is something like an emotion. So if you get angry, are you distant from the anger? And if you're not distant from the anger, what does that mean? Does that mean the anger is you or is, you know, inseparable from you? Could you separate yourself from the anger? So distance and separation, and we've been using the terms, as you can see, they kind of naturally blend into each other. There is a whole set of questions about how we are situated in space. I think I'll leave it there. We'll stop there for today. And a couple of these things we talked about at the end, I'll spell out a little more in the transition. Okay, thanks everybody.